The Ark of the Covenant that we've read about in this chapter was not a very big piece of furniture. Of course, it was a piece of furniture that belonged to the tabernacle where the Lord was worshipped. It was just about 3 feet and 9 inches long and just over two feet wide. And nonetheless, it was vitally important to the children of Israel in their journeys. There was a mercy seat upon that, what was called the mercy seat, upon the Ark of the Covenant. And inside, it was just a box, you see. And inside that box, there was the Ten Commandments, the manna, some of the manna that the Lord had sent down from heaven, and also Aaron's rod that had budded on one occasion. And I'm sure every Christian here is aware that the Ark symbolized the presence of God with the people. And over in Exodus chapter 25, it reads there in verse 22, and the Lord is speaking to the people, and he says, "There I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat," it's above the Ark of the Covenant, "from between the two cherubims, which are upon the Ark of the Testimony, of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel." You can see how vital it was that the Ark of the Covenant was with the people. You can also discover there in 1 Samuel and chapter 4 the impact of the Ark not being there anymore had upon some people. It says in verse 18 of 1 Samuel chapter 4, "And it came to pass when he made mention of the Ark of God, that he fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake," this is Eli, "and he died. For he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. Verse 21, naming of a child. It says, "And she named the child Ichabod, saying, The glory has departed from Israel because the Ark of God was taken." These were days of great concern, days of great discouragement for David and those who were with him. The people had very fond memories of what the Ark, which symbolized the presence of the Lord, had meant to them. Over in Numbers, reading there about the Ark going out 3 days' journey, the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord going before them to search out a resting place for them. That was so important for them. Joshua chapter 3, leading them through the River Jordan when they came to Jericho and they were marching around the city. The Ark there was in the midst. And the Ark before David's reign, in the days of Eli, as we've just read, it had been taken. Quite a number of years had slipped away, maybe somewhere between 50 and 70 years. It was there in obscurity. But now, as we read in, as we did read there in 2 Samuel chapter 6, things are going to change for the better. And folks, God's presence with his people in Northern Ireland has made all of the difference all over the years. And in leading his church, that is those who are saved, and in making a way for his church, those who are saved have always made, and rightly, made so much of the importance of God being with us. And as we look at this portion today, knowing that as a country, there's fear now and uncertainty about a whole lot of things, and things that maybe I would have been guilty of taking for granted years ago. They're not certain anymore. And knowing that the speed of change that we've seen over the past couple of decades, if that continues, then there could be dark days ahead. And you and I are in a position today to try as far as lies within us to do something. Something that might bring the presence of God amongst us again in a special way. Now, he's with us here today. We believe that with all of our hearts. But that he might come and visit Ulster again in a way that would be noted by everyone. And therefore, the title this morning is Ulster's Greatest Need. Ulster's Greatest Need. And that need, you can think of needs, of course. But the greatest need is the presence of the Lord. And I trust as we look at this portion this morning for a while, the Lord will use what we say to help and encourage you. I want you to notice, first of all, David is stirred. David is stirred. Remember what had happened in Eli's time. The ark was gone. Things had changed. Eli was brokenhearted and he wasn't alone. And now, David is stirred. Please look at the beginning of verse 2. In 2 Samuel chapter 6. And David arose. That's what it said. And David arose and went with all the people that were with him. For David to entertain the thought that the Ark of the Covenant might ever be back in its rightful place among them, there unquestionably needed to be at a great desire within his heart, lip service or sympathy was never going to be enough. There had to be that longing in his heart. And as you read there at the beginning of verse 2, you can see that David arose. He was stirred. He was stirred that the presence of the Lord might be with them. Presence of God, if you read in 1 Samuel chapter 13, you needn't worry about it now in verse 14. The Lord was speaking very straight to Saul. And he said to Saul, who'd had every opportunity, he said to Saul there in that passage, "Thy kingdom shall not continue." This is the words, they're really from the Lord. "The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart." And that's what David was. As we've mentioned before here on different occasions, Saul spent so much of his time making sure that there's attention upon him. But God needed a man after his own heart, and he had one in David. In the Psalm number 84, it says, "My soul longeth, yea, even fainteth for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God." David, with all of his imperfection, he had his chief concern, you might say, more than anything else, would be that this ark would be brought back again. He wasn't crying out, "I need it so that I can extend my kingdom." But rather, he had a real heart concern that the ark of the Lord and the Lord's presence, special presence, might be back among the people. Over in Psalm 132, there are words which show us something of the depth of this stirring. It says there in verse 3, "Surely I will not come into the tabernacle of my house, nor go up into my bed. I will not give sleep to mine eyes or slumber to mine eyelids until I find out a place for the Lord, an habitation for the mighty God of Jacob. Lo, we heard of it at Ephratah. We found it in the fields of the wood. We will go into his tabernacles. We will worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, into thy rest, thou and the ark of thy strength." It's as though this is on David's mind all the time. And Christians today, while there's many things that occupy your thoughts, you're maybe like me, you have plenty, you worry. You have your own concerns about your own matters. And you worry about things perhaps regarding your friends, and rightly so. But a really great concern that every Christian ought to have at the present time is that as a nation, as a country in Northern Ireland, that we might know the presence of the Lord in a special way. Now, I know that quite a number of you are aware about the revivals that have come. Some of you have read quite extensively about those revivals. And you know the difference. In the ordinary day, like we're living in now, in fact, we're living in hard days, but we're still able to worship. There's one or two being saved here and there. You know the difference in that. And when the Lord comes and turns everything around. Saul had very little interest in the ark of God. As I said, he was captivated by himself. But David was a man after God's own heart. And here we have David. And brethren and sisters, David is stirred. If you look there just in 1 Samuel chapter 14 and 18, you will see that Saul inquired for a very short time at the ark of the Lord, the Lord's presence being there. 1 Samuel chapter 14 and it's verse 18. It says, "And Saul said unto Ahiah, bring hither the ark of God, for the ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel." Now, look at verse 19. "And it came to pass, while Saul talked with the priest, that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thine hand." Withdraw thy hand. But Saul, you see, when he looked at the esteem which many held him in, and we know that even after he died, it said that they were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided, he and Jonathan his son. And maybe Saul, to some, was quite a likable man. But unfortunately for Israel, Saul felt that he could live without the ark all right. He felt that he would be able to get by without that symbolic presence of the Lord being with him. We read earlier about Ichabod. After Eli had died, the glory of the Lord has departed. I don't bring you here this morning or invite you here to discourage you, but in Northern Ireland, in a whole lot of ways, the glory of the Lord has departed. In a whole lot of places where he should be exalted and uplifted, the glory of the Lord has departed. And sin abounds in every hand. And there's deadness and darkness. And whether it is in school or in government or in legislation or even in hearts and homes, the thought of so many people in Northern Ireland is, I can do okay without God. And I'm not going to go into the detail. I'm sure you watch the news occasionally anyway, or you know about it. And more we're hearing about the push, and we're seeing the evidence there that really there is a turning away from almost everything that the Bible teaches. And whatever Christians go to put their hand to, there's mocking of them believing in creation. There's mocking in them believing in a young earth. There's mocking in them believing that God's commandments are relevant. There's all kinds of mocking against God and his cause. But you and I ought to be stirred. We ought to be stirred as David was. And I'm sure, like me, and like plenty of people I've been talking to in these recent weeks, you just wonder, what can we do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do if they start taking away more and more civil and religious liberty from us? What can we do? Well, it says here, David arose. and he was stirred. And folks, you and I can be stirred. And this is the starting point. This really was the start of it. And we have to, with respect, we have to think of those who, even of our friends who think, well, it's okay, I can live without the Lord's presence. Well, we can't. And knowing our own responsibility to future generations, brethren and sisters, I feel that we really do need to be stirred. Good for all of us today to ask the Lord to come and stir our hearts. Not that we should think negatively all the time, but we can't bury our head in the sand, as some do, and think that all may continue just as it is now. I don't know how much news you watch or anything. That's none of my business. That's your business. But I just was informed that way down in the Republic of Ireland, there have been attacks on little places of worship. No big congregations. Just a few people gathering out there, and there's been recently attacks on them. Now, it was actually, I believe, members of the Orange Order down there who highlighted this. There's a point of information for you. They were attacking places of worship, and any councillors that come out to meet the people in these congregations to probably say they're sorry this had happened and there's anything they do, those councillors have been the objects of abuse for going to offer their sympathy. We're not naive, and we know what's going on, and that is down in the Republic of Ireland at the moment. But wouldn't I be a fool, and you be a fool, to think that if in X number of years circumstances here were different, that that wouldn't be the kind of thing that we could be facing in church and in witnessing for the Lord. Already listening to different people who know about missionaries in other places, in so many parts of the world, things have changed really quickly. You remember a few years ago, when in a very, very short space of time, we were mentioning it to you here, there were over 100 evangelical churches established in Nepal. And it's as though there was actually a time of revival blessing. And there are many churches now that are the Free Presbyterian Church of Nepal. And it was easy to go out and to present the gospel and to reach people. And many, many people were converted. Homes were established up in the mountains and little groups of people meeting to worship the Lord. And now as the weeks go by, the persecution is intensifying in a most remarkable way against in that same place. So we don't want to take anything for granted. We're glad the Lord's with us today and he was with us in our homes, but we need to pray that he'll be with us in a special way. Because we have not only David stirred here, we have David stressed. If you look, please, I think it's verse 9. This is where we didn't read all the verses this morning. Uzzah had put forth his hand to touch the ark, and it's the Lord, well, he died. It says that in verse 7. And in verse 9 it says, "And David was afraid of the Lord that day and said, how shall the ark of the Lord come to me?" David had made an attempt here to bring the ark. He had about 30,000 men with him, if you look at verse 1. They bring the ark up, and you can see them going to Kirjath Jearim, and great mass of people. It ended in disappointment. And if you look there in verse 3, there was a new cart. There was nothing but the best here. But still, it ended in disappointment. And if you look there at what happened in verses 6 and 7, you'll see there was a shaking of the ark, and there was Uzzah's action. It says in verse 8 that Uzzah, whatever way he pronounced that, he called the name of the place Perez Uzzah to this day, and the word Perez Uzzah literally means the breach of Uzzah. It was very serious what he did. And what God did, he stepped in and he just stopped the proceedings. Do you ever wonder why revival stops? Or why the blessing that we really want to see, why it stops being the portion of God's people? Well, God had given instructions. And Uzzah ought not, and he knew not, to put his hand to the ark. In Numbers chapter 4, there were vessels of the sanctuary that were sitting forward and so on. And the sons of Kohath shall come to bear it, it says in the word, but they shall not touch any holy thing, lest they die. It was God's instruction that this was not to be touched. There was a shaking of the Ark of the Covenant. And Uzzah, perhaps meaning well, he put his hand out and touched it and he died. And with David, there's great stress in verse 9. Says he was afraid of the Lord that day. And he's at the wit's end corner now. He's asking, how shall we ever bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem? I had to learn a very hard lesson. Number one was that a multitude did not mean there's going to be success. And the second thing was this. Whatever instructions God gave, they needed to stick to them. And they need to make sure that they followed to the letter what he had said. And we love to see people coming in, don't get me wrong. We'd love to see as many of you back tonight as possible. And we'd love to see some more coming along in the coming days. And in some of the bigger churches, there are big crowds, and that is, they're thankful to the Lord for that. But you see, the blessing of the Lord is not associated with numbers. And they thought, because of 30,000 people, we'll go down, we'll get it, and we'll make our own way back with this ark. It says there in the word that it stayed in the house, in verse 12, it stayed in the house of Obed-Edom. David was very stressed and very frustrated. He was also upset in verse 8, and he was actually blaming God. It says, and David was displeased because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah. And it is no secret that many of God's people are very stressed today. And many people are wondering and worrying. And maybe you're one of them. And you're thinking, as I often do, we're thinking of the boys and girls. And we're just asking the question to ourselves more and more, what if things continue as they are? How's it all going to be? And you're stressed. Christian, the Lord knows all about your heart. And he knows how, unfortunately, those revivals do come to an end. We know that God is sovereign in revival. But often man goes off on a tangent. And he goes his own way. And today, while God can bring a crowd of people into an evangelical church, there is a crowd psychology. And there is an emphasis on sensationalism. And there are those things that are, they're really not in the instructions that God gives for the blessing of his church. God blesses his church. And this is another subject, really. And I'll mention it later on in the message. He blesses his church when they continually seek to live in accordance with his word and they give themselves to praying and laying hold upon him as though the blessing hadn't come at all. And not to just think, well, it's here now and we'll make our own way from here on and we'll change a few things. David was disappointed, to say the least. And there's better preachers than me and better men than me. And they have lived and died. Stressed. Lived and died stressed, wondering what is ever going to become of their homeland. David was stirred, but then David was stressed. But then if you look in verses 11 through, I think it's through 12, there was a thought come to his mind that show us that David was steadied. See, the Lord still loved him. Says, and the ark of the Lord continued in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. And it was told King David, saying, the Lord hath blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him. Why? Because of the ark of God. And David got the news that, yes, we failed. And he was disappointed and broken. And he was cross as well because of what had happened regarding Uzzah. And he discovered that they'd got it wrong the first time. He recognized now that everything would have to be done exactly as God would have them to do it. Do you remember what we mentioned from Numbers? That the service of the sanctuary would belong to certain people and to them alone. And he had tried a new method because there's a new cart here. God nowhere told them to get a new cart. It had to be carried on people's shoulders. And that's what he endeavors to do now. So the new method is set aside. And Christian, I know you agree with me in saying that it is the preaching of God's word that changes men, nothing else. The buzz of a big sensational jumpy meeting changes nobody for good. But it is God's word, the light of his word, shining into darkened hearts that shows men their sin. And it is God by his spirit, in answer to your prayers and mine, that can grant unto our loved ones repentance unto life. Then there's change. So David's coming again now. He's able to set aside his disappointment and his discouragement. He's going to go about getting the ark back now, but he's going to do it in God's way. Just was thinking there a while ago of somewhere, wasn't in the United Kingdom, I don't think, where in order to just to get a crowd to come along to church, the people they decided they would have a barn dance, and at the end of the barn dance, there's a man testifying to how he'd been raised from the dead. God forbid that our young people would ever be caught up in that kind of environment that would be totally divorced from the teaching of the word. You and I can look to the Lord today to steady us. I hope you haven't given up and thinking, well, I can't do anything and I'm just gonna let it all drift away, and God is sovereign, and so he is. But what I'm looking at here is God stirring the heart of a man who is responsible just like me and you. And it says there that David arose and went with all the people that were with him. This was the starting point. And when God comes and stirs our hearts, as he needs to do in these days, what we need to do is go forward in his way. What can we do different to change the situation and the possible future situation in Northern? Just keep praying. Keep preaching. Keep witnessing. Keep doing what we do and devoting ourselves to it and looking to the Lord and leaning on him. You will notice something here which was almost out of character for David. You'll notice in the first occasion, whenever David went, there's no mention of him having prayed, seeking the Lord, and going forward. But I believe now he's gone forth, making sure he was going to do things in accordance with the teaching of the word of God. Some people are very harsh. And they will say, oh, Christians, don't pray today. There's no prayer anywhere, and people leave it out, and there's the church prayer meetings are not filled the way they used to be. And while there may be room for more, I don't think that's all true. I think God's people are praying. Certainly here in Ackley and in other places outside the Free Presbyterian Church as well. People are praying. And they're seeking the Lord, that the Lord would come. I know because of my talking to them. And they are scared of everything that they see around them and scared what might happen to our liberty and our freedom to worship in the way that we do. Scared about a whole lot of other things as well. But they're praying. They're praying, and it's the praying. The Lord helps us to be steadfast when we pray. I think David went down now with a great degree of confidence as he went back down to look for the ark again. I did miss out some verses for the sake of time, but you will see there in verse 17 we read it, and they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in his place in the midst of the tabernacle that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. There's no new ark now. I don't think there's 30,000 people now. And you have David now looking to the Lord. Looking to the Lord and steadied in the Lord. Maybe in your experience you need steadied. I would never be critical of you, Christian, if you feel upset and greatly troubled, because we live in a very troubled world. But I trust that all of us will always remember that Ulster's greatest need, it does not lie with politicians, whoever they are. Ulster's greatest need is for God to move in a remarkable way. And to come as he did a few years ago in Nepal. Now it's different at the minute. But a few years ago in Nepal, you could preach the word and go out and do outreach without let or hindrance. And many, many people responded. And then now it's all closing down. And there's all kinds of difficulties because of that. But you and I can pray that the Lord would yet have mercy upon us. I know we feel very small and insignificant in the world. And nobody listens to your voice, Christian. And your concerns about moral matters. Not very many people are really interested in what you have to say. But Christ is the answer. Northern Ireland's greatest need is the Lord's presence. For him to come back in a special way. I have a final thought here. We noted David stared. I hope I'd be stared and you do too. David stressed. Have I ever been stressed? You don't understand. Not half. And so have you. But then David steadied. And we trust that even in these days that David will steady us, that the Lord will steady us. But we have in verses 14 down through 15, David satisfied. He's got the ark back now too, and his heart is filled with joy. And there's nothing. There's many things in life that can bring you joy. Friendship, like we have here, brings you joy. New ones in the family brings you joy. Doing God's work and seeing God at work fills your heart with joy. So long ago now, from there was a really big move of God in Northern Ireland, that none of us can really... Some people might remember days when it was pretty good, but days of God's right hand were a long time ago. And we said here there had been quite a period, maybe between 50 and 70 years, when the ark had been away and decay had set in and things had become stagnant. And David wasn't going to just sit back and watch it. He knew the greatest need that they had was the Lord with them. And folks, whatever the future holds for Northern Ireland, we know that God is sovereign. We've said before, he's sovereign in life, maybe a funeral service, and he's sovereign in death. And in the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. And I asked myself, consider, am I praying as I ought to be, that we would know this blessing we're talking about? That we would know his presence in the way that we really need to know it in order for things to change. As one of the men in the minister's week of prayer would often pray that God would come and revival blessing. And he says, if you do that, Lord, and change the country for our young people, then we can die happy men. And that's true. That's true. And may the Lord help us all. And I know in some way this morning I've been speaking to the converted. You understand these things. But let's redouble our efforts. As far as we can, humanly speaking, by our prayers to bring God's presence back to Northern Ireland again. And let us continue. Whatever others may do, that's okay. But whatever others may do, let us continue to worship the Lord reverently, to preach his gospel without fear or favour. And that means whether people like it or not, it's for their good. And let us continue to worship and to pray in accordance with his word. And I think then we can expect the Lord to move. Someone put something they printed out on the computer up in one of the doors in the kitchen there a few years ago. Don't think it's there now. It said, we must attempt great things for God, and we must expect great things from God. And folks, that is true, and I trust that the Lord will answer for us in the days to come.